Tales of the Left Hand, Book 3, written and read by John Maher. The story so far. Amidst delirious ravings mixed with long-forgotten memories, Tesca finally surrendered to death at last. But just as he did so, something else happened. Chapter 22.
"Sister,"
called a voice some distance off, and Tesca was instantly awake, his eyes snapping open. He was lying on a cot in a small tent, the old and stained canvas glowing from the dawn's sunlight pressing against the exit flap.
"Sister,"
the voice called again, closer this time. Now Tesca heard footsteps crunching through long grass, moving quickly, and then more noise, someone moving on the ground outside the tent.
"Sister, what are you doing out here?"
the voice asked. "Liam," Tesca realized, recognizing the voice.
I came out here for fresh air,"
came the faltering, half-asleep response.
"Yvette, she was here, then she left. Or did I dream that, too?"
"I am sorry, Liam. The smell was too much for me."
Tesca breathed in through his nose and had to admit that she had a point. The air was thick with the cloying collection of myriad scents produced by the sick and dying, something similar to the air in the Duke's chambers when he'd been at his weakest the year before, but far more concentrated. Wondering how many unfortunates had been brought up to this tent to expire, Tesca's empty stomach lurched as he swung his legs off the cot, setting them on the ground.
Bare feet. Where did my boots go? I liked those boots.
"Has your husband answered the muster, then?"
Liam asked.
"Oui."
Liam sighed, his voice heavy with regret.
"I'm very sorry for your sister. A fighter he was, and I've not seen any man fight such a wound as his for so long."
There was a pause.
"Perhaps you'd like to come back down with me and get some food?"
Food, Tesca thought.
Despite the reek inside the tent, he was suddenly aware of a desperate hunger. The twin desires to escape the smell and fill his belly pushed him onto his feet, and it wasn't until he was putting his hand on the tent flap and throwing it aside that he realized he was walking, that he was moving under his own power, and that there was no pain.
"I'll come back with a detail to collect his body and son's wrath!"
Liam shouted, springing back from the tent entrance, landing in a stunned sprawl on the ground. At Tesca's feet, Yvette scrambled away with a scream, eyes wide. Tesca watched the fear on their faces quickly transform to wonder, then awe. Liam rose to his knees and remained there.
"Travis," he breathed, tears welling in his eyes, "the sun returns."
"Unlucky,"
Yvette gasped. Tesca looked from one to the other for several moments. He cleared his throat.
"Could I have some food?"
he croaked, his voice weak.
"And some water?"
"The sun!"
Liam roared, throwing his head back with righteous joy, hurling his voice into the sky.
"The sun returns!"
"Food?"
Tesca said again. Yvette got to her feet and rushed up to him, her hands scrabbling at the hem of his shirt, yanking it up. She made a wordless cry, one hand covering her mouth, as she gazed at his smooth, unblemished abdomen.
"A miracle?"
she whispered again, this time in free speak.
"Truly, a miracle."
Now Liam got to his feet, slowly approaching Tesca in a half-crouch, one hand extended forward like a supplicant.
"Please, Travis, give me your blessing. Both of you, son and daughter, give me your blessing. I recognized you. I believed."
Tesca stared at Liam for a moment, his mind clearing in the fresh air. Then, reluctantly, he touched Liam's hand.
"My blessing upon you, Liam. Now, you were saying something about food?"
"Yes, yes,"
Liam said as he rose, and Tesca was surprised to see that although Liam was more thickly built, they were of the same height. Looming in and out of Tesca's pain-racked vision as he had, Tesca had assumed Liam was much larger.
"You must have a meal," the acolyte told him. "All of the blessed have had native food upon their return to us."
"The blessed," Tesca said. "There are more who have had this happen?"
"Oh, yes, Holy One. Well, you already know this, of course."
Liam broke off at the sound of others approaching. He turned away to meet them, and Tesca saw the crisscrossing lines across his back, dried blood staining his tunic.
"Liam,
What happened to you?
Penance, the acolyte pronounced. Beholding you is my reward for enduring it.
Tesca glanced down at Yvette, who was staring up at him with a mixture of doubt and fear, but she seemed to be getting over her shock.
Sophie, he said to her, cupping her chin in his hand, it's me, Travis, the same as always.
She nodded, still wary, but now listening to him. Tesca drew her into an embrace, kissing her cheek, then spoke quietly into her ear.
I don't know what's happened, but it looks like we'll have to play the married couple for a little while longer. Do you agree?
Some of the tension went out of her as her embrace softened into one of genuine relief.
Oh, thank the Father, she whispered. Play acting and lies I can handle, but I am out of my depth when it comes to miracles.
Me too.
He started to pull away, but she held the embrace longer, waiting until the new arrivals had climbed the rise and could see the pair of them clearly. Then she gave him a long kiss before breaking away.
Praise be to the Triad that I am yet a wife and not a widow, she cried, her eyes moist with tears.
Then, taking his hand, she turned with him to face the near dozen pilgrims now standing before them. It sounded as if there were more coming up the slope behind this first group, whose pinched, dirty faces were taut with expectation, and Tesca knew two of them, fellow travelers in the caravan that had brought them here. As these two recognized him, they shouted with joy.
The sun! They called. The sun returns!
The other pilgrims who had not seen him before did not join in the exultant cries, but far from showing skepticism, they looked curious, wanting to believe, but needing more. Liam raised his arms, getting their attention.
Met Travis when he joined our caravan, I did. He and his family had escaped from slavers and armorbacks that night, though one of the fiends had sorely wounded him. His wound festered, and his strength ebbed as we drew ever closer to this holy place. Then the slavers he had escaped, still seeking their former captives, came upon us on the road.
Aye, said one of the pilgrims who had been part of the caravan. Saw them, I did. Came to take the Triad back.
But Travis,
Liam went on, pointing to the pilgrim, acknowledging his statement,
though weary unto death, rose into the air from his bed, smote the slavers with his voice, he did.
The crowd began to stir, Liam's passion fueling their own.
He spoke the holy word, filling our limbs with strength, and we fell upon the slavers, driving them back.
Travis saved us, called out the other pilgrim who had been there, gave us his power to battle our enemies.
Now several of the other pilgrims nodded, shouting encouragement, eager to hear more.
But not without cost, Liam said, turning grim. His favor grew worse, it did, and though he yet lived when we arrived yesterday, even I grew fearful that Travis would soon hear the final muster.
Saw him as they brought him in, said a third man, whom Tesca did not recognize. Paler than his clothes he was, save for his belly, all red and bloated. Death was strong in the air about him.
Aye, the wound that left him writhing in agony, Liam went on, more pain than any other could bear. Naught to do but to bring him up here and wait.
Raise your shirt, Yvette said quietly. Show them.
Tesca stepped forward and hiked up his tunic, revealing his bare abdomen, drawing gasps and groans of wonder from the crowd.
There! Liam shouted, pointing. His wound was there. Tended that wound for days I did, mixing the poultices that even I knew could do no more than ease his pain. But see now! There is nothing! Not even a scar!
Several of the pilgrims sank to their knees, wide smiles across their faces.
Travis never stopped fighting, Liam shouted. He never gave up, not for an instant. And just see him before you now. Return to us, restored to health, reborn as one of the blessed.
All of the pilgrims there were now swept up in the moment. More and more of them began to shout praises to the Triad and drop to their knees, some reaching out to Tesca, begging for his touch as Liam had. He felt Yvette's hand press against the small of his back, urging him forward. And he obeyed, putting his hands out before him. He quickly learned to let his hands drift across their palms and fingertips, as if he was walking alongside a row of tall grass, brushing each stalk as he passed, for each pilgrim had a grip like a steel trap, clutching his fingers and holding him in place if he let the contact linger too long. But even the most casual touch seemed to satisfy the petitioners, each of them curling away, cradling their caressed hand as if it had suddenly been turned to gold.
Tactus Arus, Tesca thought absently, letting Liam guide him through the growing crowd, Yvette just behind him. As they reached the crest of the low rise the tents had been built upon, Tesca looked upon the pilgrims' camp and the abbey beyond it.
The only road into the area was to his right, curving around the slope the abbey was built upon and disappearing behind it. To his left was a small farmstead that looked as if it had been out of use for several years, a large house and barn surrounded by a wooden post and rail fence. Both house and fence were undergoing repairs. There was a wooden scaffold erected on one side of the house, and bright rails of fresh wood interspersed with the old in the fence. Between the farm and the abbey was a wide space, over 100 yards, now filled by ramshackle tents. He recognized the stamp of the sword priests upon the growing settlement, the tents set into ordered rows, those pilgrims healthy enough to work assigned to tasks, only the crippled and infirm gathered around the abbey gate. There were at least 300 people down there, perhaps closer to 4, and Tesca could see that work was underway for further expansion. There were pilgrims clearing other areas a distance away, removing what little vegetation was there, marking rows for new tents. Beyond them, open fields were being cleared for spring planting. Raising his gaze past the campsite to regard the tall abbey gate, he suppressed a shiver as the memory of passing through that gate as a young boy brushed against his mind. "I have been here before. It wasn't just the fever. Father brought us here. Why? Did he have questions? Or was he here to answer someone else's?" Until this morning, he'd had no memory of this place whatsoever, and although he was now positive that he had come here as a child, any other details he tried to dredge up were jumbled in with the delirium of the past few days. Meeting Allie, the battles with Tanner Jack's men, that all happened on Narlus. But now I'm remembering it happening inside the abbey as well. If I'm going to separate truth from dream, I need time and solitude. But as Liam tugged on his sleeve, urging him to begin the descent toward the camp, he knew that both of those were likely to be in short supply. The celebration of the jubilant pilgrims surrounding him was drawing attention from the rest of the camp. He could see distant faces turning to watch their procession down from the tents, figures of workers in the fields dropping their tools and heading his way, even some of the invalids near the gate struggling to rise. He felt helpless, unable to do anything but be carried along with the crowd, flowing down the slope to join the camp, and he glanced behind him. Yvette was there, looking as anxious as he felt. Reaching back, he took her hand and drew her to his side, then leaned down to speak in her ear. "There's a Sabrian proverb, ride the tide or be rolled beneath it. We've just got to keep our heads above the water, all right?" She looked up at him with a grateful nod, taking strength from him, and he found his own fear ebbing away. "Here we go." And they stepped off the slope to join the gathering throng. His name and burgeoning myth were moving faster than he was. Already some of those ahead were calling out, "Travis! Travis! The sun returns!" Liam continued to make a path for them, steadily progressing toward the farmhouse, and Tesca sensed the crowd's complicity in this. They retreated from Liam, allowing him to move on, while pressing in more closely behind Tesca and Yvette, helping the acolyte guide them in that direction. Abruptly, Liam stopped and stepped to one side, revealing Donal, Rorik, and Timon. The senior sword priest went pale when he saw Tesca, almost taking a step backward in surprise.
"Sir!"
Liam called, his voice brimming with energy, struggling to keep a joyous smile off his face.
"The Triad has gifted us with another of the blessed they have. Pleased to say I was the one who discovered him."
"Thank you, Liam," Donal said, still staring at Tesca in disbelief.
"You are healed?"
"Completely," Tesca replied, raising his shirt. All three men, who had seen Tesca's injury for themselves, visibly reacted to the sight of his now unbroken skin, the two acolytes crying aloud with awestruck smiles. Donal's reaction was similar, but Tesca saw a momentary hesitation there as well, a flicker of confusion crossing Donal's face.
He knows some parts of our story don't add up, Teska realized, but he can't ignore the fact that I've become one of these blessed, whatever they are. He's not sure what to believe. Teska stepped forward, his hand raised.
It is good to see you again, Donal, he said, loudly enough for the crowd surrounding them to hear over the noise. I have you to thank for getting me and my family here safely. Bless you and your noble work.
He looked at the acolytes flanking Donal and smiled at them as well.
Rorik, Timon, I remember you as well. You have my thanks.
The two acolytes grinned and nodded. Donal flashed them a stern glare before looking back at Teska.
We do no different for any of the faithful, he said to Teska. Come with me, please.
To meet the commander? Teska asked, which drew a look of surprise from the sword priest.
Put her rank aside, she has, the priest went on after a moment. All equal here in the eyes of the triad.
Of course, Teska said. Lead on, then. Their progress through the growing crowd went faster with the four sword priests leading the way, still heading for the farmhouse. Then they passed through a gate in the fence, and abruptly Teska and Yvette found themselves alone with Donal and the acolytes on an open patch of scraggly grass. The crowd, while still clamoring and cheering, did not climb over the fence to follow them, or even put so much as one toe past that boundary. Donal turned back to face Teska and Yvette.
Meeting's for you alone, Travis. Wife will await you here.
No, Teska told him. Donal blinked in surprise.
Sorry?
No, Teska repeated. She would not be parted from me last night. I'll not be parted from her now. Besides, he added, glancing behind him at the crowd of pilgrims pressed against the fence, as you said, we're all equal here in the eyes of the triad. He felt Yvette squeeze his hand in silent thanks. Donal's jaw twitched with a frown, but this lasted only for a moment.
As you wish, the priest said a moment later, shrugging as if it was of no importance.
Teska did not want to antagonize Donal needlessly, but there was no way he would allow himself to be separated from Yvette.
We don't know how things work around here, he thought. Until then, we can only trust each other.
The pilgrims working on the second level of the scaffolding peered down at Teska and Yvette with eager curiosity as they approached the farmhouse. Rorik and Timon took positions on each side of the door while Donal escorted Teska and Yvette inside. As the door was closed, the outside clamor muffled to a dull roar. Teska breathed a sigh of relief. The crowd noise had been louder than he'd expected, almost painful. He could see that this building was not so much a residential home as a place for farm workers to rest and take their meals. The ceiling was low, supported by thick wooden beams. Everything he saw was purely functional. There were no decorations or embellishments anywhere. Ahead of them was a staircase to the second floor, to their left was a large but spare kitchen, and on the right, in the direction Donal was gesturing for them to go, was the dining room. He heard voices coming from there.
How many days before the first foragers start coming back, Patrick?
A woman's voice, older and firm, speaking Terrandon.
Least three, ma'am, came a male voice in the same language. Got to go further afield to find folk that haven't made the gift already.
Very well. We've enough to last that long, I think.
Molly?
Aye, seems so,
a third voice began, female and younger, but sounding weary.
I'll check after.
The voice broke off as Teska and Yvette entered. The long table in the middle of the room was hardly different than the ones in the Duke's barracks back in Kohain, sturdy and serviceable, the surface riddled with many years of dents and gouges. The three people he'd heard sat at the far end of the table, a collection of papers set out in front of them. All were dressed as pilgrims, but with the cleaner clothes that he'd come to associate with the sword priests. The man looked to be of a similar age and build to Liam and the other acolytes, with close-cropped blonde hair and beard. He regarded Teska silently, taking his measure. The elder of the two women was at the head of the table, raising her gaze from the papers. A hard, lean face with sharp cheekbones beneath weathered skin, pale eyes framed by dark graying hair cut just above her shoulders, she sat up straight, conveying an aura of confidence and command. The other woman was a study in opposites, seeming to fold in upon herself, only giving Tesca and Yvette a quick glance. The skin beneath her eyes was dark and puffy, as if she had not slept for days. Tesca judged she was several years younger than himself, with a tumbling mass of black hair bound back with a leather thong, a half dozen errant locks hanging about her face. But behind the hair, Tesca saw the resemblance between the two women at once, noting the similar width to their faces, their matching jawlines and gray eyes. Glancing to his left, Tesca saw something on the wall that reinforced the room's resemblance to a barracks. A row of gleaming swords mounted on hooks. These were neither trophies nor decorations, but battle-ready weapons, carefully maintained. Their edges were keen, their hilts all bore scratches and dents, testifying regular use, and their leather grips were all worn smooth. 10, Tesca counted. Donal, Liam, Rorik, Timon, this fellow at the table, that's 5. He knew without having to ask that the older woman at the table owned one of the remaining swords, but he very much doubted the same was true of the younger.
"So, Donal," the older woman said with a curious smile, glancing from Tesca to Yvette and back, "2 miracles in one night?"
She continued to speak in Terrandon.
"Only one, Mum," Donal replied in the same language. "The man, Travis Durham. He's the one I was telling you about last night."
The older woman's demeanor shifted instantly, her satisfaction disappearing behind a blank facade that rivaled grievous in its opacity.
"I see. Woman's your wife, is she?"
"I'll not be parted from her again, Mum," Tesca explained, speaking Terrandon himself. "My apologies if that bucks your cart."
A shiver passed through the young woman as she stifled a yawn.
"Son's wrath, Molly," the older woman snapped with a frustrated sigh. "Back to bed with you. You're of no use after one of your bad nights. Continue this later, we will."
"Yes, mother,"
the young woman said as she rose awkwardly from the bench, retrieving a pair of wooden crutches from the floor near her. Then, with a speed born out of long practice, she hiked herself across the room, past Tesca and Yvette, avoiding their gaze as she left. Tesca heard her slowly make her way up the stairs, then the creak of timber above their heads as she limped into one of the rooms above them. There was a short swelling of noise from outside, a unified cheer, then a return to the low rumble of an excited crowd. The woman did not react to the change in sound as she returned her gaze to Tesca, rising from the bench and striding across the room toward them. The man sitting at the table with her stood up as she did, flanking her on the right side. Handsome was the best word to describe her, Tesca decided. There was a vitality to her movements, a harnessed, directed energy that reminded him of Allie Fane, and Tesca knew that this woman had never allowed herself to be confined behind a desk. He saw numerous old scars on her arms and hands, and one on her scalp that disappeared back into her hair. She held out her hands to Tesca, and he raised his own, thinking this was some sort of greeting. Instead, she grasped his hands and turned them over, looking at his palms.
"Calluses on both hands, as you said," she commented to Donal.
"Aye, ma'am," Donal confirmed, "and scars on the arms beneath the white. A soldier."
She nodded, still looking at his hands.
"Not rank and file, though, used to sword and shield. Calluses on the right match the left. 2-blade fighter he is."
She gave Donal a wry smile.
"Missed that, you did."
Donal looked a trifle embarrassed, and she returned her attention to Tesca.
"Wasn't aware the Duke of Gideon trained his rangers to fight with 2-blades.
"His grace leaves the rangers more leeway than the rank and file, mum," Tesca replied, "so long as the job gets done."
He was surprised how easily his native tongue came back to him. He hadn't spoken more than a sentence or two of it at any one time in years. All he had to do, he realized, was keep a picture of his father in his mind and say things the way Dunstan Carrick would have.
"Where are you from?" the woman asked.
"County Ferlin, mum."
"North," the woman said, thoughtful. "Durham's a northern name. Kin to the Tayhills, they are."
"Truth be told, ma'am, we're kin to the Malricks," Tesca corrected her.
"Oh, aye," she sighed. "Malricks. Many years since I was last there. Getting old."
She gave him a friendly smile, but Tesca knew that he'd just dodged a trap.
"Still, don't get much further north than County Ferlin before you're into the wilds and beyond,"
she went on.
Bit of distance between Ferlin and Gideon there is.
More than a bit, mum, but my dad joined a caravan as a guard, and I went with him. Met some rangers first time through Gideon, drove off some bandits they did. Always thought fondly of them after, so when my beard came in, sought them out.
You've no proper beard to speak of now, the woman said, looking at his scruffy chin. Why'd you shave?
Yvette brushed against Tesca's shoulder.
At my request, madame, after we married, his beard was itchy.
Tesca chuckled, leaning over to kiss the top of Yvette's head. Decided that more kisses are better than less, so why refuse? This brought a bemused smile to the woman's face, but she still looked skeptical.
Say you're married, you do, but there's no rings on any fingers, I see, and no pale skin to show they were ever there.
Sold our rings weeks back, to pay for passage we did, Tesca explained. Sophie don't tan much, and I tan real easy. Ta always joked there was a kiffy hiding somewhere in the branches of the family tree.
The room seemed to drop in temperature as Tesca's joke crashed against the sword priests like waves against a stone cliff.
So, after leaving Gideon's service, headed to Trevon, the woman went on, continuing to probe. You'd not keep calluses this fresh on both hands without practice. They let you fight with two blades on the city watch as well. How do you put the grab on the guilty without a free hand?
A second blade's easy enough to draw at need, Tesca said, if there's a man who'll not come quiet. Best to end the fight fast once it's come to that.
Good answer, she said with a grudging nod. Kelisandra Fletcher, I am. My boys and I are the ones who keep everyone outside fed and safe.
Tesca frowned. Donald said we were all equals here.
And we are, Kelisandra confirmed, but we've some experience in maintaining a camp, so it's turned out best for us to keep things. If you'd seen how this place looked before we arrived, she trailed off, shaking her head. Everyone at cross purposes, hoarding what food they could. Starvation. No proper latrines, Doug. Chaos. Pure and simple. Them outside as can help, we're teaching.
Another swelling of crowd noise came from outside. It sounded different to Tesca this time. He thought he could hear a single voice at first, shouting something, followed by the crowd's louder response. Kelisandra cocked her head, noticing the pattern as well. Frowning, she glanced at Donal, who nodded and left, the sound of the crowd briefly rising as the front door opened and closed.
Well, mum, Tesca said, resuming the conversation, I've some experience at keeping folk safe. Be glad to share in that work with you and your boys.
Kelisandra smiled at that as she shook her head.
Blessed have other duties, Travis. We'll not waste your gift putting you on patrol.
She paused, looking him over again.
Hungry, eh?
Starved, ma'am, truth be told.
All of the blessed are, first morning, she replied. Donald will take you to the barn. Set it up as a place for the blessed to live, we have. Dare say you've had your fill of tents.
She nodded as Tesca made a rueful chuckle.
There's food and water there to fill your belly. The others will teach you your new duties.
Tesca wanted to ask what those duties would be, but the mere mention of food had started his stomach rumbling. His wound might be healed, but he was also weary and lightheaded. Not the time for a confrontation, he decided. Besides, a little solitude might help me sort out memory from fever dream. He felt Yvette squeeze his hand again, but he hadn't forgotten her.
Sophie comes with me, she does.
Oh, of course, Kelisandra replied. You've made that most clear. I'd not keep a man from his wife.
She turned to Yvette, then gave her a knowing smile.
Heard you're barren, I have. Perhaps your husband's miracle will be yours as well.
Yvette gave a nervous laugh, clutching Tesca's arm.
Eat hearty, Travis,
Kelisandra said with an earthy grin which did not quite reach her eyes.
Seems you've some work ahead of you.
Tesca had no choice but to look down at Yvette and share a sheepish grin with her.
Seems I do, ma'am. Triad smile upon you.
And upon you,
she began to reply when the front door opened again and Donal leaned into view from the doorway. He said nothing, only jerked his head back toward the yard with a somber expression. Kelisandra's friendly demeanor vanished faster than a man could blow out a candle, replaced by that calm, stern facade as she strode past Yvette and Tesca. The acolyte attending her, Patrick, moved quickly to follow. Outside, the noise of the crowd swelled again, responding to a single voice.
What is it?
Yvette said quietly to Tesca. Listen, Tesca said. Yvette tilted her head, frowning. Then her eyes widened as she recognized the words. Father, daughter, and son. Father, daughter, and son. Father, daughter, and son.
Oh, no, she breathed. You don't think...
Yes, I do, Tesca agreed, pressing Yvette toward the door. The clamor of the crowd suddenly exploded into a roar as they came outside. It looked like every pilgrim who could walk was surrounding the farmhouse now, all of them pressed up against the fence, staying behind that boundary. Except one. Sidois stood on the lawn, pumping his fist in the air, leading the pilgrims in a chant, turning on his heel as the crowd saw Tesca and Yvette leave the farmhouse. His eyes met Tesca's, flashing wide with shock, and Tesca could tell that until this moment, the old pirate had not fully believed the news of Tesca's recovery. Then, crying aloud, he ran toward Tesca and Yvette, his arms thrown wide. There was nothing for the pair of them to do but join in the tearful reunion, scrambling past the stunned sword priests and charging out across the grass toward Sidois, the three of them meeting in the middle of the lawn in a desperate, clutching hug. All around them, the crowd cheered and wept for joy.
So, here you are, the pirate shouted over the din, their huddle giving them a moment of privacy. A most unexpected reprieve from my labors in the field.
He gave a bitter laugh.
Do you have any idea how hard it is to use a shovel with only six fingers? That cochon Donald's suggestion, no doubt.
He looked into Tesca's face.
Aside from your recovery, you are the same as before, mon ami?
As far as I can tell, Tesca replied.
Sidois grinned and spun away, facing the crowd.
Thanks be to the triad, he proclaimed,
kissing his hands and flinging his arms wide to the sky, sending his affection to the heavens.
They have sent my son back to us!
Praise the triad! The crowd shouted back.
Father! Sidois called.
The response was instantaneous, three words from 300 throats.
Guide our hearts!
Sidois tilted his head toward Yvette, but she was already stepping forward, taking his maimed hand with her own.
Daughter! Take our pain! Came the reply.
Tesca stepped to the other side to take the pirate's good hand, knowing there was no other option. All three of them had to do their part to maintain the charade, to keep the measure of respect Sidois had cultivated intact. A triad's not a triad with only two, he thought, briefly wondering where he'd heard that, very recently. He drew in a breath, and the sensation of it, painless for the first time in days, brought a smile to his face. He was alive. He was whole, and as the wonder of that fact crashed upon him, he shouted to the crowd with all his strength,
Son! Give us strength!
The crowd roared back, jumping up and down with joyous delight. But as the cheers poured over the three of them, Tesca could feel the gaze of Kelisandra and the other sword priests on his back. The gauntlet had been thrown down. This work is copywritten 2013 and has been written and recorded by John Maher. If you'd like to learn more about the Freeze, get yourself a bit of swag, or comment on this episode, please visit talesoftheleftand.com, where you can also find a link to our official Facebook page, and if you'd like, make a donation to help keep this series going. Thanks for listening.